It's time for Twig. This week in Google, Matthew Ingram joins Jeff Jarvis and me as we talk about the latest Google news. We play with the new Google Translate. We take a selfie stick picture and a whole lot more. This week at Google, up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 283, recorded January 14th, 2015. The Wand of Narcissus. This Week in Google is brought to you by HipChat Plus. Collaborate, save time, and be more productive with your teams. HipChat Plus is IM, video chat, plus file, code, and screen sharing all in one place. Invite your team members and get a free 30-day trial of HipChat Plus at hipchat.com/twig. And by SmartThings. SmartThings lets you monitor, control, and automate your home from wherever you are using your smartphone. Right now, SmartThings is offering This Week in Google listeners 10% off any home security or solution kit. And get free shipping in the U.S. when you go to smartthings.com/twit and use the offer code TWIT10 at checkout. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you can leverage technology to keep your money safe. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show that covers not just Google, but the cloud, Facebook, Twitter, the everything in up there above us. Jeff Jarvis is here from the City University of New York, professor of journalism, blogger at buzzmachine.com, author of so many great books, including
You're Sticking Up,
Geeks Bearing Gifts, his latest. Can I get that on Amazon?
You can't get that on Amazon, and I left a copy on your desk.
I know you did. I was so sweet. I just, I came in.
As you were crying in pain.
Yeah. The book fairy left me something while I was getting tattooed.
Yes.
Nice to have you. And as you know, Gina has left the building. She'll be back every month. But right now, we've got a great person replacing her. Matthew Ingram is here from GigaOM. Always great to have Matthew on the show. Hi, Matthew.
How you doing?
Nice to have you. Your Canadian fellas up there, Blackberry's near. Is Waterloo near you?
It's a couple hours away.
You're in Ottawa, right?
I'm in Toronto.
Toronto. Okay. For some reason, I thought Waterloo was near Toronto. Is it kind of? Is it a backwater?
I'm sure they wouldn't like to think of it that way. It's a smallish town in a sort of rural area.
Isn't it funny that Blackberry's there?
Yeah, well, they came out of the University of Waterloo.
Oh, that's why. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, they may not be there much longer.
Samsung.
A lot of Reuters reported that BlackBerry was in play, that Samsung had made an offer of as much as $7.5 billion, and immediately BlackBerry stock jumped 30%, closing at $12.59 on the day. You can see that's that spike. This is the one-day graph.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah. If I drop off, it's because I'm selling some some shorts that I had on.
Do not short BlackBerry at this point. But this is not the first time we've heard this rumor. In fact, this rumor's been floating around for years, literally.
It makes a certain amount of sense. I mean, that's why it keeps coming up. It would make a certain amount of sense for Samsung. BlackBerry has patents that have value. QNX theoretically has value. You know, the question is what that value is, and $7.5 billion, I don't know, seems steep to me.
Business Insider says the patents alone are only $2 to $3 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of know this because there was some thinking about chopping up BlackBerry and selling off the parts.
Right.
Yeah.
So we kind of know
then what's the rest? What's the other $5 billion?
I have to wonder, you know, QNX was a big part of CES. Ford has announced they're going to use QNX in the new Ford Sync, replacing Microsoft's car operating system. QNX is actually a very highly regarded real-time operating system, and BlackBerry owns it.
Yeah, and so that has value, but is it $5
billion? Still, $5
billion. I don't
know. Yeah.
You know, Matthew, you know how I love Canada. You know how I'm a Canadophile. You know how I've wanted to move to Canada. But between Rob Ford and BlackBerry and whatever else has been going on lately, what's going on with Canada, man?
What do you mean? Come on. Jeez. Is there something wrong with Canada?
Things are the same. You know, Rob, we took care of Rob Ford, so not a problem anymore.
Is he not the mayor of Toronto anymore?
No. He is a councillor.
He's a councillor again.
Yeah. But, I know we just have a regular old boring guy now, so.
Well, and you know, Matthew, I'm very disappointed. You didn't even apologize.
Well, I should say I'm
What's
sorry.
What's happening to Canada? What has happened? I ask you.
Nothing has happened to Canada. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're still doing the same old stuff. And in fact, I would argue that with the whole lumber sexual trend, we're going to be on top pretty soon. Like that pretty much, photos of that just look like Canadians, basically.
It's not just Hockey Night in Canada. It's Hockey Night all over the world.
You know, lumberjack jackets and boots. And
you invented that look.
Yeah, we invented that.
Not you personally, Matthew.
Not me personally.
Anyway, we'll watch that story. It just broke a few minutes before the show began, and I'm not sure exactly whether it's creditable or not. Although the fact that the stock market clearly believes it maybe lends it some credibility. We talked a little bit about this on Windows Weekly. Google and Microsoft continue to bicker. Now, for the second week in a row, Google's security forces have revealed a flaw in Microsoft Windows, saying Microsoft had 90 days to fix it and did not, so we're going to tell you about it. Microsoft's response is effectively, come on, man! Come on! They did issue an out-of-cycle patch.
You Scroogling us?
Then in related news, they say the Scroogled site is down. It points to a different site now, to a site called Why Microsoft. So if you go to Scroogled.com, you get Why Microsoft. I think that's probably not an auspicious name for a site. Why Microsoft?
No, it's not.
Why Microsoft? but it ain't Scroogled. In fact, of late, under Satya Nadella, Microsoft has been kinder to Android and iOS than it has been to its own Windows Phone users, offering a touch-first version of Office, for instance, first on the iPad, and now it's coming to Android. Still not on Windows Phone, or Windows, for that matter. So maybe it's an unrequited love.
You know, the vulnerability thing, I know there's a whole sort of etiquette around how you release information like that, but I have to go with Google on this one. I think that's a public service. I mean, if Microsoft had time to do something or to say something, then they should have.
I know this is the case, that in the security community, if you discover a flaw, the thing to do, the done thing, is to tell the company that makes the software and give them an opportunity to patch that. Google did that. I think maybe the only question is, well, then how much longer do you wait before you disclose it? Does anybody think you should never disclose it? Like, well, even if Microsoft didn't fix it, Google should never tell anybody? I think everybody agrees that at some point hackers are going to find it. So it's incumbent on the security firm that discovers the flaw, if the company doesn't fix it, to report it, right, or not? What's the ethical?
Haven't you opened a window, Leo? I mean to ask you this, but isn't there a window open then between the time Microsoft does act, has Google made Microsoft users more vulnerable?
Yeah.
Or is the argument that, well, Microsoft didn't do anything. They were better off pushing them into it.
In fact, someone in the chat room mentions that it was fixed a couple of days later.
Well, it was.
You know, and that's fine. So for a couple of days, it was an exploit.
So Microsoft wrote in the person of Chris Betts, who's a senior director of their security response center. He posted, although following through keeps to Google's announced timeline, Google did say, as always said, you got 90 days, keeps to Google's announced timeline for disclosure, the decision feels less like principles and more like a gotcha with customers, the ones who may suffer as a result. What's right for Google is not always right for customers. We urge Google to make protection of customers our collective primary goal. Google says the public has a right to know about these flaws, and if a company doesn't fix it,
Yeah, and I think if you don't have a timeline, then Microsoft can just say, yeah, we're going to get around to that. We're working on it.
Right.
Please don't say anything. Right? And then it's still a problem and nobody knows about it.
This has been going on for years, and I think that this wouldn't be such a big deal if it weren't Google and Microsoft, because they're such obvious rivals.
Yeah.
But I remember talking to Matthew Conover, who was a security researcher. This was on the screensavers, so that means this is more than 10 years ago. He was one of many researchers at a company called WooWoo Security, and they had found a serious flaw in Microsoft Windows, and he was irate. He says, it's been over a year. We found many flaws in Windows, and it's been over a year, and Microsoft has done nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
So in absence of this threat of disclosure, Microsoft may very well sit on its hands.
Yeah, I think beyond it, you give the company notice. You have a time limit that's the same for everybody. You know, if you make an exception for Microsoft, give them a little longer, that you have to do that for everyone.
Betts writes, we are in favor of something called coordinated vulnerability disclosure. And this, as far as I can tell, is Microsoft's idea, although other software vendors apparently have agreed to it. Under the principle of coordinated vulnerability disclosure, finders disclose newly discovered vulnerabilities in hardware, software, and services directly to the vendors or to a national CERT, Computer Emergency Response Team, or other coordinator who will report to the vendor privately, or to a private service that will likewise report to the vendor privately. The finder allows the vendor the opportunity to diagnose and offer fully tested updates. The vendor continues before any party discloses vulnerability or exploit information to the public. The vendor continues to coordinate with the finder throughout the vulnerability investigation. Upon release of an update, the vendor may recognize the finder in bulletins. If attacks are underway in the wild and the vendor is still working on the update, then both the finder and the vendor work together as closely as possible to provide early public vulnerability disclosure to protect customers. In other words, if it's a zero day. But what they don't mention in this CVD policy, and it's, again, a Microsoft policy, is a time frame. The assumption is that Microsoft's going to work to patch it, or any company's going to work to patch it. But what if they don't?
I guess one argument that I read was that Google could have, well, basically that releasing the code, like effectively telling people how to use this exploit, doesn't help anyone but bad people. It doesn't help users because there's no patch, and so they can't fix it. So effectively, it only helps the bad guys.
Right. And, okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate here because I guess the question really is, how long do you wait? Do you wait a year? Do you wait 10 years? Because as the clock ticks, there's the increased likelihood that a bad guy will discover this independently.
Right.
And then we got a problem.
The only real argument is Google could have just said there's an exploit or a vulnerability. They didn't have to release the entire...
Maybe that's the way to do it, kind of stage the announcement. Eventually, you have to have a proof of concept.
No, they would have gotten crap for that, as saying, okay, now you know something.
Right.
And now you're letting everybody know there's something there. Now, I don't think they could have done that. I think they would have gotten more crap.
Yeah, they're going to get crap no matter what.
Well, and there's additional crap. Or maybe we should say, let's change the metaphor, egg on Google's face. Because, and you guys talked about it last night and All About Android, Jason Howell. There's a serious flaw in all versions of Android prior to KitKat that Google, and this is an interesting, you got to choose your words carefully. Some say won't, others say can't. I would say can't fix.
Wow, I didn't hear that distinction.
Yeah, it has to do with WebView and the old Android browser.
Remember that in the early days of Android, instead of getting Chrome on a Nexus device, you'd get that blue icon that was, it said the internet, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just Android browser.
Yeah. The thing is, that WebView is built in throughout the operating system. So any application that displays a WebView, and many applications do for login purposes and so forth, is using that WebView. So it's not a simple component to patch. But it's a very severe flaw. So what that means is billions of Android phone users are vulnerable to, I think it's a cross-site scripting hack. And Google, here's my why I say can't patch it. All Google can do, remember, Google makes Android, but they don't control who uses it. All Google can do is tell the manufacturers, the LGs and HTCs and Samsungs of the world, hey, you need to, here's the patch, which they've done. You need to push this out. It's not, Google can't, has no physical means of pushing it out. Samsung has to push
Google
it out.
Google did do the patch. Google did do a patch.
Well, and this is the other, yes, there is a patch. Google did not do it. Third party did it. It's my understanding. Right. But it's an open source project. That's not unusual. So the open source project has a patch. But the problem is fixing this requires not just, and by the way, and the other thing Google did, which is a point in their favor, they changed this system. So in KitKat and later, they can push a patch out through the App Store.
Through the Play Services. Yeah.
So they can fix it now, but prior to KitKat, there was no mechanism for them to push this out. They can do is say to the...
Because otherwise, Android's in a position of weakness versus a, you know, fascistic control like iOS.
Yeah. It's just the way Android is. It's an open source project, which Google funded and supports. And does kind of, I mean, there's debate about how open it is, because if you're going to use AOSP and you want Google services, you have to have the Google Store and blah, blah, blah. But Google Apps, and then Google has to approve your implementation. But that doesn't give Google the ability to go into a Samsung phone running Gingerbread and fix it. They don't have any way to do that. They have to go to Samsung. And then, by the way, Samsung probably has to go to the carriers.
Right, exactly. There's so many layers of barriers in front of them.
Right.
Not to mention the platform numbers for Android that just came out basically say that the versions that are affected here are more than 60% of all devices worldwide. So the fact that Google doesn't have their hands specifically in it to address it themselves, and they're leaving it in the hands of researchers to discover, and then, you know, independent third-party developers to code around it and then roll those changes in the AOSP, and then does that get pushed out to all those two-plus-year-old devices? Probably not.
It's available to the manufacturers, but it's up to the manufacturers to fix it.
And, I mean, are manufacturers ever rushing to update two-year devices?
They want you to buy a new phone.
Heck no, they're not going to do that.
Same with the carriers. 60% of Android devices are vulnerable. They run Jelly Bean or lower.
Yep.
If you're running 4.4 or later, you're fine, because Google changed this and they update through Play Services. You've probably seen those Play Services updates. They happen automatically. So Google says, we don't develop the patches ourselves. We welcome patches with the report for consideration. Other than notifying OEMs, we will not be able to take action on any report that is affecting versions before 4.4. The fix, Google says, is KitKat.
Just update your device. Piece of cake.
Simple.
I don't think you could fault Google for this, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, maybe they should have thought of it. They didn't set up a way to do this in the past. They do have a way now.
Right.
Here's a good question. PS Chops asks in the chat room, have we seen exploits?
I think that from what I read, the researchers have, you know, discovered these exploits, and they have been rolled in. But I mean, you know, they've discovered the holes. Have they been exploited actively? I suppose that's a really good question.
I should point out, Apple does not fix bugs in iOS 4. Microsoft doesn't fix bugs in Windows XP.
Right.
Anymore. But they did for a pretty long time.
Right. And so that's the issue.
Because
of
the market share, right?
Jelly
because
Bean
there were so many users of XP.
Right. Jelly Bean isn't that old.
Yeah.
So the fix, I don't know what the fix is. You have to get a new phone.
I guess with all of those companies, they're hoping at some point it's a trade-off between do you help or fix, or do you kind of use that as a stick to get people to upgrade?
Right. Yeah, that's why this Google Microsoft thing, the timing couldn't be worse for Google, because Microsoft says, see, they're not fixing their flaw.
But theirs is arguably not as fixable. I mean, the Microsoft.
That's
one.
What I would submit. Yeah, Microsoft and all desktop operating systems have a mechanism for fixing.
And apparently, Microsoft said we've got regular fixes coming out in a couple of days. Could you wait? That's
right.
And Google said, no.
They should have waited to patch Tuesday. I think there's a little...
It's a little FU in there.
Yeah. Something for both sides. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Title II. Self-driving cars, Google domains. We should put that in the... are we going to do a changelog? Jeff, what do you think? We did such a bad job without Gina last time.
We did. I think we can incorporate it.
We'll just incorporate it in. So you can retire the trumpets.
Do we have a changelog here?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I put a few things in there that would be changelog worthy.
That's pathetic.
What do you mean that's pathetic?
No offense to a producer. We love you. But two things.
Gina, she did find a lot of those
things. She worked hard. We miss her.
She did.
I'm just putting another one in.
Yeah, I'm sure there's more. Open.
Just put another one in here.
In the effort to keep her, it wasn't my job to do so. I had no authority. But I said, what if we get rid of the change log?
Yes.
Let's work.
Anything.
All right, we'll do the change log. We got four things now. Three things.
I'm putting some in there. Our show today brought to you by HipChat. See if we had, you know what? We do have HipChat. Let's set it up. We should have a host HipChat. HipChat is a great way for a team to stay in touch. We started using it with our web design team for Kitchens as we create a new web page, a website for Twit. And I was so blown away. And then I realized, this is from Atlassian. And they're using Jira at 4Kitchens, so it made it a perfect relationship. HipChat Plus is a way of keeping teams on the same page, not just IM. It's better than email because email, is kind of asynchronous. Well, I don't know. It's just better. I can't describe it. It's so much better. It gets the thing done. So you got IM, you got texting, you got cloud storage, document sharing apps. You're probably using all of them, but HipChat puts it all in one place. And video chat, document sharing, screen sharing, system updates, code sharing. It integrates into 57 services like GitHub, Jira, Zendesk, and more. So, you got a website monitoring service, integrates it in, and HipChat becomes your kind of dashboard for everything that's going on. Email's too slow. Meetings get sidetracked. Regular IM doesn't work. HipChat Plus. Plus, you can go back in time. So, like email, it's a record of everything you've talked about and done. It's easy to set up, fun to use. Your team will love it. We love it. It makes your team wildly productive. And, by the way, iOS, Android, Linux, Windows, Mac, everywhere you are, and even the web. So that actually means it's everywhere. The web-based version works on everything. HipChat.com/Twig. I want you to try HipChat Plus for free. You don't need to give them a credit card. Don't worry. Just go to HipChat.com/Twig. Click on Start Chatting to sign up and invite a few team members. All the features will be free for 30 days. Actually, for the first 100 signups that we do, they're going to extend that 30-day free trial to 90 days. So sign up right now. Don't wait. HipChat.com/Twig. After the free trial, you can always stick with the freemium version. It's free forever. Or if you want some of these additional features, it's very affordable. HipChat.com/Twig. Free for 30 days unless you do it right now and the first 100 signups right now. We'll get it for 3 months free. HipChat, your team, your project, in sync instantly. And Jeff will send you a link because we have set up HipChat. We use it now not only for the web designers, but our engineering team has started using it. Our sales team has started using it. I think we need a hosts and producers HipChat, Jason. I think that'd be very helpful.
Be awesome.
Yeah.
That way we can foment revolt against you, boss.
You can do that. Hey.
Yeah.
Why not? I'm all for it. I'm a Democrat. Now. I'm egalitarian. If you guys want to overthrow, fine. I'll retire. I'll move to the Seychelles Islands. Enjoy the white sand beaches. Mai Tais. The endless Mai Tais. Do you know who
My
else
parents lived there for a year.
Did they? Did they like it?
They loved it.
Is it Dutch?
It is not Dutch. It's sort of a weird amalgam of French and British and the local culture.
Perfect. That's what I want.
But it's paradise, effectively.
The République des Seychelles. They actually have a Creole.
Yeah. And there's the only thing I remember is there's a replica of Big Ben in the main square on the main island. Nice. And it rings twice just in case you were sleeping through the first one.
A lot of nap times in the Seychelles. It's 115 islands. in the Indian Ocean. Wow. I want to move there. Oh. So just going to let you know I'm retiring there.
Can't.
What?
Nope. You're not. Nope. Nope. Can't.
Internet access is not great. Nope.
No, that's why I'm going there. That's precisely why I'm going to the Seychelles Islands. So Kevin Rose is retiring. Well, not exactly. He's leaving.
Retiring.
I was going to wear my Dig 4. It was my idea shirt. I should have. He was at Google Ventures. Remember, he founded Dig. He worked with us on the Screensavers. He's been on many times on our shows. And he started a iOS app incubator called Milk, which he then sold to Google, joined Google Ventures. And then he backed down because he wanted to go back to app development. Now he's going to do that. His company, North Technologies, he's formerly left Google Ventures. And, of course, it has raised $5 million.
I think he's wonderful.
Yeah. He's got $5 million in venture funding.
The second app that lists the story?
What's the second app?
Sorry. Yeah. What's the second app? It sounds just obnoxious.
Well, I have Watchville. Yeah, I have Watchville, too. So
Yeah, come on.
No, but that's just Kevin.
For people.
You could. I could have written that in my sleep.
Wildly overpriced watches.
No, that's right. Mm. It's basically it's not even an app really. It just aggregates watch blogs, and there are quite a few of them. I think he's smart. I think that the Apple Watch, especially the edition, the solid gold Apple Watch, is going to jumpstart an interest in watches, in old school watches, good watch. He's always been a watch collector ever since he got rich. Anyway.
I know. There are people, and I have friends who are that way too, but I always make fun of them because when the revolution comes, people, you're getting Timex.
It's weird to wear something on your wrist that costs more than your house. But it's jewelry. What do you want?
Do people do that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, real people?
Well, no, because if you could afford a watch like that, you have a much more expensive house.
Yeah, so, I would assume.
So it's kind of a piggyback thing. House price goes up, and it goes like that.
I had a friend who said he had gotten a great deal in a watch, and it was 65% off, and it was $25,000. And I said, I don't know where you live, but it's not in the same world I live in.
I know. It's weird. Well, it's jewelry. It's not about the time.
It's not about function.
Anyway, I have both of Kevin's app because I'm a friend and a fan. Tiny's kind of cool.
2 years, Kevin's going to sell that new venture thing back to Google and become a VC again.
Yeah, for $100 million. He's a smart man. He made money on I think he's made money on everything.
Did he make money on Dig?
I think probably not, but I don't know. Mm. I don't pretend to know because I don't ask him those questions. It's not. But I think he made money on Revision 3. Mm-hmm. Dig, probably not. Although, wait a minute, I'm sorry, he did. You know why? Because he took money off the table during one of the venture rounds.
Oh, did he? Okay.
So that's the thing, you know, founders do. Mm-hmm. Is you get a $15 million venture round and you go, and by the way, I'm taking two. So he did. I know he took at least $1 million off the table in one of the Dig rounds. Not because he told me, because it was public knowledge. So let's go back to Title II. Title II revisited. What do you folks in Canada think about this whole regulating the internet thing?
we're in favor of it. Government regulation of things is hugely popular in Canada.
Yeah.
No, I mean I'm personally not in favor of it, but we have a history of government regulating everything. So
it's actually my sense that Canadian internet service providers are some of the first to do things like paid prioritization.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't was it TELUS that used to block Skype? One of them did.
Oh yeah, and the stories are legion. I remember writing about cable and Rogers was the first to come up with nice sounding ways of like packet shaping or bandwidth management and so on. And what they really meant was throttling BitTorrent. And, you know, that was just, it was no big deal. I mean, people complain, but I don't remember anybody at that time, at least, turning it into, you know, a sort of policy issue. I remember when Shaw Cable,
that's who was doing it.
Yeah, Shaw was a big Western cable provider. They came out with internet telephony.
Right.
And I remember saying to a guy, an analyst, oh, well, that means they can compete with, you know, the other, with the real telecom companies and drive prices down. And he laughed. And he said, are you insane? Why would they do that? They'll just put their prices up to exactly the same height within 15 cents or so, and everybody will make a boatload of money, which is exactly what happened.
And then they started doing things like, I remember very well, after an hour on Skype, you would just, that would be it. That's all you get. That's all you get.
Yeah.
So the company that, by the way, does all this deep packet inspection for Comcast and others is in Waterloo. It's called Sandvine. And they make the box that, at least for a while, Comcast was using to block BitTorrent and other things. It looks into the traffic. They call it traffic optimization.
Bandwidth shaping.
In bandwidth shaping. We're just talking.
Like manscaping.
Yes. It's bandscaping. revenue generation, traffic optimization, network security. That's Sandvine. So it's not illegal, but they're also, as you can see, widely used by ISPs all over the world to keep an eye on what the subscribers are doing.
Well, and Rogers was very good at, in fact, they all did, but Rogers was very good at kind of portraying itself as, you know, we're just doing this to help you guys because you, the normal internet user, are having all your bandwidth sucked up by these guys in pajamas in their mom's basement, you know, BitTorrenting everything.
Bandwidth hogs. How dare they? Traffic classification technology for meaningful insight. That's what they call it. For communication service providers, DPI is the foundation that enables the delivery of advanced services. Traffic classification for actionable data. That's it, right there.
Yeah.
That's it.
Actionable.
Actionable. Like, call the RIAA. Anyway, the FCC, I don't know whether you subscribe. Certainly the CRTC in Canada is as bad. But I don't know whether you subscribe to the notion the FCC is trying to protect consumers or trying to protect themselves or trying to protect providers. Tom Wheeler, who President Obama made the chairman of the FCC, kind of notorious for having been a lobbyist for both cable and wireless companies in his previous life. Nevertheless, says February next month, about a month from now, in fact, I think the 25th, the FCC will decide, and he indicates they're going to go for Title II, which we've all been talking about. Title II is the section of the Telecommunications Act of 1934, updated in the 90s, that says that basically allows the FCC to regulate broadband providers as common carriers. He says, we're going to do it, but we're going to use forbearance to keep from overdoing the regulation. But it does allow us. Now, Verizon says, no, we'll sue anyway. It's going to go on and on in court.
I think the hard part is that, you know, I've talked to lots of people about Title II. We've written about it a lot at GigaOM. Stacey Higginbotham knows it inside and out. And, I mean, the problem is the trade-off is you either have Comcast buying everyone and then doing whatever it wants to the internet, or you have the government trying to regulate the internet. And it's like choosing between getting stabbed in the eye and getting shot, you know, in the butt or something. Like there is no, neither one of those is particularly great. Like
the argument is made that the net neutrality is internet regulation, but our dear Senator Al Franken argues instead that no, what it is trying to stop, is trying to keep the internet the way it is and just prevent kind of a takeover of the internet by the companies and change. And I buy that.
I am encouraged. Go ahead.
And I think Title II, I mean, the principle of Title II is that, you know, it's a pipe and it should carry things.
Right.
I'm trying to remember the phrasing that David Weinberger used in the update to the Clutrain manifesto, but you know, bits should flow and they should not be restricted based on where they come from or who paid for them or, you know, that, and theoretically at least that's the way Title II is supposed to operate or should operate.
Right. I'm encouraged by this most recent call from the president and the FCC saying, and this is the other side of the coin, yet regulation, but also competition
right.
is the solution. And, you know, 19 states in the U.S. have laws that prohibit municipal Wi-Fi.
Right, and that's ridiculous. And I know Tim Wu and Susan Crawford both, I think, have said if you're going to, like, there needs to be more options for communities to have competitive providers. And if it's actually literally against the law to have someone do that, that's a problem. It's not enough to just have Title II and have the FCC telling people what to do. You need to help incentivize more competition in regions as well.
I have to commend Obama because, you know, in the campaign, he said he would do this. And then it seemed like when he appointed Tom Wheeler, oh, my God, he's gone the opposite way. But he did, you know, in a speech say Title II, we got to do Title II. And now the White House says it wants to end laws that harm broadband service competition. I think this is actually this is the best possible outcome. This is from the report. Laws in 19 states, some specifically written by special interests, trying to stifle competition, have held back broadband access. Today, the president is announcing a new effort to support local choice in broadband, formally opposing measures that limit the range of options available to communities. They're filing a letter with the FCC saying, you know, we'd like your support in this. The FCC is apparently already examining state laws and considering whether it can invalidate them by using its authority to promote competition in local telecom markets. This would be things like not only municipalities offering Wi-Fi, but in some cases, municipalities taking over the infrastructure and providing internet. There were a couple of lawsuits. I remember a couple of municipalities. Chattanooga, Tennessee, for instance, provides internet to everybody in Chattanooga, and it's a great solution. A lot of people have called for, and we've talked about this a lot. In fact, the guy who brought it to my attention first was one of the creators of Lotus 1-2-3. Well, no, not Mitch Kapor, of VisiCalc. Let's go back even farther. And he said the thing that municipalities should do is use their right of eminent domain, take over the infrastructure, and then sell it back, rent it back to a variety of providers so that there's competition. Just like the water and power, it can be run by the municipalities, by the local governments, but the service on top of it can be provided by private companies who compete with each other for price, performance, bandwidth shaping, you know, fast lanes and all of that.
I mean, there is an argument if you buy the sort of public highway or water utility argument, you know, that the actual infrastructure should be available to anyone, and that private companies should basically have to bid to run their services on top of it.
Instead, we give them, in the States anyway, we give them monopolies.
Mm-hmm.
So the last week, Tom Wheeler, the chairman of the FCC, proposed changing the definition of broadband. See, one of the ways that they get away with this is by saying, well, broadband is 4 megabits downstream, 1 megabits upstream. And if you talk about that, 75% consumers have a choice of two or more providers. If you really define broadband as it should be, and this is what Wheeler's proposing, as 25 megabits down and 3 megabits up, that's what you'd need to watch video, mm-hmm. to use all the modern services, then three out of four Americans, 75% of Americans, have no choice at all. They do not have a choice between providers. There is one incumbent provider who can provide true broadband in 75% of areas. That's why there's no competition. Obama's speaking today at an internet service provider in Iowa. Go ahead.
I apologize. My lag is bad.
Jeff has a terrible connection. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's awful. Well, here's an example. I'm paying for 50 down and 50 up on files.
You're not getting it, dude.
Are you BitTorrenting?
I'll do a speed test. It's 50 down and 50 up.
Are you BitTorrenting?
Not running anything. Jake's not here, so I know he's not running anything. I always wonder if Obama's – this is like the equivalent of him just doing immigration and closing Guantanamo, and it's the internet equivalent of that, of saying, let's just do this stuff.
Right.
And get going.
Except that he never did close Guantanamo.
Right. Well, I know. That's why I'm fearing. That
yeah.
It's closed to new guests.
New guests.
They're not accepting
that's
any
a,
new guests.
That's a start. So he's in Cedar Falls. He's speaking right now, actually. Iowa's first gigabit city. I'm trying to think if it's municipal internet.
Yeah, he showed a graph or a chart of high speed in other countries. And so it was, you know, South Korea and then wherever, Tokyo or cities. And then the first one in the U.S. was Cedar Falls.
Right. Well, but Iowa was a really good test case because there's a 2/3 of Iowans are in rural areas. I mean, there's a huge rural population that isn't well served. And that's his part. So to me, it's an issue of equality. You know, if you don't have access to high speed internet, it's not just that you can't watch Netflix. You can't really participate in what's in the world, you know, and it's an issue of good, just economic development. Municipalities should be able to do this.
I know that, at one point Mark Andreessen did a sort of tweet storm talking about net neutrality, which I then aggregated in my job as a journalist. One of the sort of core arguments was that he believes we're going to need orders of magnitude more bandwidth to do telepresence and all the, you know, 3D modeling.
Imagine the educational opportunities provided that could be provided in rural areas if they have high speed.
But his argument is that we can't, if we have Title II, like, basically, he was saying we need the owners of these networks to invest hugely in more bandwidth, and if we make it less economically viable for them, they won't do that.
Well, and that's exactly, I mean, should we call Jeff back? Because I don't want this to just be me and Matthew going back and forth. let's
not
take
that. That wouldn't be great.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Right. Not that there's anything wrong
with that. Yeah. I wouldn't mind getting. I know Jeff has a lot to say, and he's probably right now fairly frustrated. So I'll wait for a little bit here before we go on. I wonder why. He says it's 50-50. That might be an example of bandwidth shaping.
I got to tell you a story. Rogers, who I use, I saw an ad just randomly in the newspaper a year or so ago, and it said, hey, if you sign up now for Rogers Extreme, you'll get 30 megabits or something like that. And I thought, 30 megabits? Wait a second. I've got Rogers Extreme. I've been paying for it for 2 years. I get like 8 megabits. So I phoned Rogers, and the guy says, oh, yeah, just all you have to do is go in and get a new router. And then so I literally just went and got a new router, and boom, 25 megabits. But had Rogers told me that? Had they sent me anything saying you can upgrade to a faster speed if you get a new router? No. They literally never mentioned it because they don't want me to get that higher speed. Right?
Yeah.
They want me to keep paying for the low speed.
Yep.
Why would they want to give me more bandwidth for the same amount of money?
So now, can we not get him back?
He's offline right now.
Oh, Lord. See, that's the question. He says, I have 50-50. He says, do a speed test.
Yeah, I think he just did a full machine restart.
I'm not sure I'd blame Verizon for this, though.
Could be it's a Chromebook.
I think, really, Jeff is insisting on using some very odd technology.
Well, he also said in chat, I think he's ready to go the Mac Mini route.
Good. We'll buy him one.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
He doesn't have to use it.
All right, I'm giving him a call.
He
right
can stay
now.
Pure. Let's see here. Yeah, Tim Tozar, Cool Breeze, is exactly right. He's an old friend of mine who is one of the members of the Bay Area Internet Service Providers, or I can't remember what he's, BAUG, I think it is. Anyway, he's very much about community internet. But it's not Dan Bricklin, it's the other guy. Should remember his name.
My good friend.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to look it up. The Google will tell me. Bob Frankston.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks. Rob is great.
Yeah. And he's very much been taking this on as community internet as the solution. Jeff, we're going to get you a Mac Mini.
I declared defeat. I'm gonna go.
Yeah, because I don't think we can blame Verizon on this one. I think this is just we got to figure out.
Why something. Not? Blame Verizon.
It's certainly worth doing all the time.
If this isn't their fault, something similar to this.
It ought to be their fault.
All right, so Jeff, we have Verizon you back. Fire. I'm not sure we have the right mic though.
Oh, not again. Okay.
Yeah. Test it out. Although we're not getting that talk back that we were. I've been riding the fader the whole show to try and minimize the echo, but.
How am I now?
Hey, there we go. Sounds better. We're getting talk
Sorry,
back.
Sorry, guys.
Check.
No, it's fine. I didn't want to leave you out. I feel like this is your.
Yeah, I know it's my thing, and I didn't want to be awful with the terrible lag. So I'll just jump in.
and we'll be very patient.
Is it okay now? I think it is. Right now?
Yeah, it sounds great right now, and it sounds like maybe the lag is minimized as well. So.
Good. Picture's not great. That's what indicates probably we're going to
have problems. I'm going to get a Mac Mini.
We'll pay for it, Jeff. Seriously, and what I would suggest, and some of our hosts do this, is just dedicate it. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah,
and
we will buy it. It'll be dedicated. We'll set it all up, and I think Steve does that. A lot of our hosts do that.
I'll take one, too.
Matthew, you can have one. It's on its way.
Let me throw this bug up here real quick just to help.
We try to get our
out.
Host to do is not use it for anything else, but just kind of leave it.
That's the key. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't. I'll still use my Chromebook for everything else. But
yeah, that's the way to do it.
I would run a BitTorrent server on it, but
but only in the off time.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'll throw all the bandwidth.
All right, we're good to go. I'll start on a single on Leo.
So we were by the way, kind of a follow-up on the story we reported last week that Google kind of weighed in a little bit on this Title II regulation by saying, oh, and it would give us access to utility poles. And, of course, immediately Verizon says, nah, they always have had access to utility poles. They're crazy. They're blowing smoke. The NCT, actually it was a cable company's NCTA filed, Google can already avail itself of pole attachment rights under Section 224. That's why they're in Austin. Google didn't have a comment. Ars Technica doing this story. So anyway, I don't. You know what? That's a minor
detail. Boys.
Yeah.
Get along and give us our internet.
Yeah, we just want a free and open and fast internet. And it seems that every other country is able to do this except us.
Well, but then in the UK now they're going to spy on everything. So we talked about this.
I'd love to get your opinions on this. We talked about David Cameron's speech on Security Now yesterday.
Oh man,
I'll bet you did.
What a train wreck!
And I think Cory Doctorow had a good takedown on Boing Boing. But
he did.
So Cameron, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, says that it should be illegal to make a communications product that the Home Secretary can't listen in on. And he said, it's okay. You're protected because the Home Secretary would have to sign a warrant for us to listen in on. Now, I have to say, I think it's one thing for David Cameron to say that. It's another thing for it to actually happen.
But what it reveals in the attitude, this is Greenwald's argument, what it reveals is just a terrible view of our rights.
Right. And Corey argues it's also ignorance.
Yes, yeah. Terrible.
He says, David Cameron says there should be no means of communication which we cannot read, and no doubt many in his party will agree with him politically, but if they understood the technology, they'd be shocked to their boots. Corey is always eloquent in this stuff. So he says Cameron doesn't know what he's asking for, because right. In order to make this work, you know, you can ban WhatsApp. You can ban iMessage or Apple's messages, both of which provide encrypted message passing that the government can't read. But first of all, you sure you want to ban iOS from Great Britain? Okay.
For Linux.
But then you can't ban Linux. Who do you ban if you're right. You know, who do you stop if for Linux or BSD?
It makes no sense, and it's like saying no one is allowed to have door locks just in case we need to come in your house
Right.
But it'll be only for your own protection.
Well, okay, but there is an analog there. You know, if you have a gate here in this area, a lot of people in the farm areas have a gate before you can get in, and they have a special key that the fire department, it's a special key the fire department can open. Because if your house is burning down, you don't want the fire trucks to have to stop at the gate or drive them down. So there's an analog for that. The TSA approved locks keep bad guys out, but the TSA has a way of opening them. So there's a precedent. Corey points out, first of all, if you put a backdoor in any kind of software, that not only makes it easy for law enforcement, but criminals, voyeurs, and foreign spies. So you've made all communications insecure.
Right.
Any firms, this is what Cameron's proposing when Corey breaks it down. Any firms within reach of the UK government must be banned from producing secure software. That includes Microsoft and Apple. All major code repositories, GitHub and SourceForge, for example, have to be blocked because that's where you'd get the open source for programs like TextSecure and others, TrueCrypt. So you got to prevent that. Search engines must not answer queries about web pages that carry secure software. I raised this point yesterday with Steve. It also means that you have to have a backdoor in secure HTTP, HTTPS, SSL. Mm-hmm. That's exactly. Not an easy thing to do since that's essentially open. Virtually all academic security work in the UK must cease. Security research must only take place in proprietary research environments where there is no onus to publish one's findings, such as industry R&D and security services. All packets in and out of the country and within the country must be subject to Chinese-style deep packet inspection. We're just talking about that. I'm sure Sandvine has a tool. And any packets that appear to originate from secure software must be dropped. Existing walled gardens like iOS and Xboxes must be ordered to ban their users from installing secure software. Anyone visiting the country from abroad must have their smartphones held at the border until they leave.
That's a fun one, yeah.
Proprietary operating system vendors like Microsoft and Apple must be ordered to redesign their operating systems as walled gardens that only allow users to run software from an app store, which will not sell or give secure software to Britons. Free and open source operating systems that power the energy, banking, e-commerce, and infrastructure sectors must be banned outright. So that's why, Steve was upset, and a lot of people are upset about this. I think it's pretty clear. It's unenforceable.
And even if it was enforceable, it wouldn't achieve what it's supposedly going to achieve or wants to achieve. Right. You criminalize security software, only criminals will have security software.
But what it indicates is a belief that there is a manifest destiny and a right for government to be able to listen to anything we say. And that's the real issue. That's what this reveals.
I agree. It's telling into their state of mind.
Well, and unfortunately, in Britain at least, and in lots of other European countries, it's taken for granted that the government has those rights. I think the U.S. is abnormal in a way, in the sense that people won't put up with that kind of stuff.
That's the sad thing, is that he's blaming the attacks on Charlie. He's saying, well, after the attacks on Charlie Hebdo in France, we've got to do this.
Which makes no sense at all.
But that's what happened in the U.S. As soon as 9/11 happened, we had the Patriot Act. That's the kind of knee-jerk reaction. Here's Prime Minister Cameron speaking. Oh, after an ad. How come there's an ad before the Prime Minister speaks? Apparently people who are having erectile dysfunction. Or maybe they're...
That's actually the Prime Minister.
Yeah, right. I'm sorry. No, it's a Charles Schwab ad.
The first duty of any government is to keep our country and our people safe. The attacks...
How much has been used?
Is that the first duty of any government?
No. It's to protect our freedom, indeed. But how much tyranny has been wrought under that justification?
And as Corey points out, it would not keep us safe.
Right.
It would open all communications to bad guys, spies, and... Corey points out, voyeurs.
Paris once again demonstrated the scale of the terrorist threat that we face and the need to have robust powers through our intelligence and security agencies and policing in order to keep our people safe. And the powers that I believe we need, whether on communications data or on the content of communications, I'm very comfortable that those are absolutely right for a modern liberal democracy. But what I've done is, as you know, we legislated very recently.
So what are we going to have here? Communications
data. It's old-fashioned illiberal. Right. It's totally the opposite of what should be allowed in a liberal democracy.
Well, somebody's pointing out in the chat room, and this is true also, that Cameron's faced with, I don't know how significant, but somewhat of a challenge from the right-wing UKIP.
The UKIP, yeah.
And that this may be merely a political statement that he knows has no chance of passing through Parliament.
I think he is trying to saber rattle and look tough.
Yeah.
You know, he's not known for being tough, and this is a great opportunity. Oh, look at all the terrorists.
Yeah.
But look at the justifications we have. In France, there has been, since the Charlie Hebdo murders, there have been, I think, 54 examples of people being arrested for supporting terrorism. Now, after a loud and clear support of free speech, then what turns around? We turn around and we abuse free speech. In the American view, you support even obnoxious speech to support speech, right? The other problem was there have been great reports, The Guardian and elsewhere, of all of the heads of state who marched alongside Hollande who do terrible things to free speech.
I know. It was really ironic to watch that parade of dictators.
France themselves just finished arresting someone for something.
Said. Right, that's what I'm saying, 54 cases of that.
They arrested a comedian, a well-known but radical comedian in France, because he posted on Facebook, something that they didn't like.
Right after saying we have to uphold free speech.
There's no free speech if you don't say what we agree with.
Right.
Completely. You know, that's really a case. I don't want to go off the reservation here, that's one of the shocks to me in the aftermath of the Charlie Hebdo case, is that when I talk about free speech, what I get back often is, oh, you're American, you have a different view. That and I wrote about this, that free speech is weirdly, oddly American. And no, it's not particularly American. It is a human right. And unless we see it that way.
Right, but the protection of it and the explicit protection of it is unusual to the U.S., In many countries, other things take precedence. Security.
Sure.
Yep.
But
I'm not saying that's right.
But I think there's a lack of understanding of what free speech means, and that really struck me after this case. And by the way, I also took to task American journalists and newspapers for not publishing the cartoons. I understand. Be clear here. I understand why the Jewish Chronicle didn't publish them.
Yes.
But Margaret Sullivan, public editor of the New York Times, first time she attacked the issue, she kind of danced around it. But today she came straight out and said the New York Times was wrong not to run the current new cover of Charlie Hebdo, and that it's not offensive by any standard of civility, and it should be there. And you know, even our American newspapers don't really understand, I think, to some extent, that free speech is not just a right for journalism, it's a responsibility.
Well, and this comes up whenever I write about free speech, especially when I'm talking about proprietary platforms like Twitter and Facebook, you know, that are effectively corporate-owned kind of town squares. Someone will say, well, free speech only applies to government. Like, the First Amendment is only designed to apply to government, and so free speech is just a fiction unless it applies to how government treats citizens, which doesn't make any sense to me at all. I mean, the whole reason why there's a First Amendment is that it's a
I'll argue that case. The reason that is that part of your free speech is as an editor. Part of Leo has free speech. Leo can say, Jarvis, I just don't like you. I've had it with you. I'm fed up with you and your damn Chromebook. Get off my air. And he has a perfect right to do that. That is part of his.
I'm not the government.
But the government can't tell me to stop extolling the virtues of Chromebooks. It's not the government's role.
Right.
But Leo Laporte has a private company has a full and complete right to decide what speech it chooses to distribute. And that's not censorship.
Sure it does. And my only point when I wrote about Facebook was, Mark Zuckerberg made a point of standing up in favor of free speech and against censorship and said he stood behind all of those principles. despite the fact that Facebook routinely censors things for no reason or for reasons it doesn't discuss. I'm not saying they don't have the right to do that. I'm just saying you can't have it both ways. You can't say that.
Well, no, I think you can. I think you can. You set your standards, because otherwise what we'd have, and this is why we have Section 230 in the U.S., is that if it were a binary switch, we would have no forums and no discussion in the U.S., because if you were held responsible, as, for example, Europeans are, for the things that occur on your site or the things that you link to, then you would have no discussion. So Section 230 protects us from making our own judgments, so that we can make our own judgments. We can let things go up that we disapprove of. We can take things down. That's our freedom. No, I have to disagree with you there. I think that they're
But Section 230 protects them. If Section 230 protects them, then why do they take so much stuff down?
Look at another way. Forget the Facebook. Let's say that the comments on my blog. I take down things there that are offensive and stupid and off target and abusive, and that is not only my right, but I believe my responsibility to have a good community there. If you believe that all speech is equal, all speech must be allowed, it's allowed by government, but that doesn't mean that I should be forced to be the host for it.
It's not inconsistent for you to support censorship on Facebook and be against government censorship.
That's not censorship, Leo.
Or whatever. You could call it censorship. Okay.
It is censorship.
Let's say it's censorship.
Censorship is when government censors you from speech.
I'm willing to agree with Matthew to broaden it to say censorship is censorship. And it just cutting something off your site for whatever reason is a form of censorship. But it's still not inconsistent to say, I have the right to do that as a private business. But what we should all fight against is the government doing that.
Yes.
That's not inconsistent. So it's not inconsistent for Mark Zuckerberg to say, yeah, of course, we have to control the environment on Facebook, but I don't want the government arresting somebody because they say something that the government disagrees with. That's not inconsistent.
But the fact is that Facebook and Twitter are used by governments to censor. They are actively censoring people on behalf of
government. Well, they also say, Matthew, they always say that they must follow local laws.
Right.
Now, Twitter does it more cleverly where it will cut out something in France and leave it in the rest of the world if the French government demands to be taken down.
Not just that. They actually fight requests in court on behalf of their users. They fight, and in some cases they have put content back that they took away because the government of whatever country didn't make a good enough case. Facebook.
So you were talking about a couple different things.
Time.
One is when they're an agent of government. When government says you must take this down under law, and they do that because they follow the law. Even if they don't like it, they may fight it, but they lose and they take it down. That's one thing. It's another thing when they choose to take something down on their own. Now, Twitter was indeed a very, very open platform, but Twitter hit the wall with two things recently. We talked about this on the show a while ago. One was the beheading videos, and two was the naked celebrity photos that have been stolen. And Twitter decided, basically for the first time really, to say, okay, that's going too far. We are making an editorial judgment to take that down on our own without request. That's their right to do.
But look, Google does not take down videos that criticize Turkey from YouTube because there's a law in Turkey against criticizing Turkishness.
They get blocked from Turkey because they make a choice to leave that content up. Because YouTube is blocked in Turkey, and they've chosen to go with that way.
Right. So I'm saying at some point, a company has to decide whether they are just going to roll over for every government request or whether there are things they are not going to do when asked by government.
Exactly. Right. Okay. We agree there. Yes. And so Google thus got out of China. Right. But are you suggesting that every company should pull out of every country where the government demands they do something they can't do?
Yeah.
That's the doctrine.
I think you have to punish these countries for having that kind of reactionary point of view. And if these companies did, the countries would soon turn around, I think.
Yeah.
Well, given the right to be forgotten, then Google should pull out of Europe, period.
I agree. Look what Google did in Spain.
YouTube a number of times, even though, so they'll punish them and block them and then they put them back on again. I just think if Facebook has principles, which it sounds like they do, then they should stick to them instead of bending over for every government that asks them to take something down.
I sympathize with your view.
Yeah, as do I.
But they fight, but it's not as simple as that.
Well, I'll tell you why it's not. They're publicly held companies, right. And they have a fiduciary right to their stakeholders to maximize profits. And it's hard in that environment to take a principled stand, I think. If it's a privately held company, they should do it. But as soon as
I don't want to go down a rat hole here, but someone recently pointed out to me that companies do not actually have a legal fiduciary duty to maximize profit.
They don't?
No, there is not a legal duty, but the shareholders
could punish them.
Shareholders can punish everybody out. But they don't have
a legal duty in the market and in the courts.
Of course, you agree. Any company, public or not, has the right to lose money and run a crappy business.
You're always protected from that. Mark Zuckerberg controls the majority of the votes.
True.
Voting shares in Facebook and
so the board he faced no risk.
He can do whatever he wants.
He faced no risk.
What are you saying Zuckerberg should do? Be specific. Should Facebook pull out of 20 countries? Should they pull out of every country that doesn't have a First Amendment?
I would like to see Facebook put up a bit more of a fight. That's what I would like to see.
You think Twitter is a good model for this?
Twitter puts up a fight.
Twitter is a better model, but I think you're presuming that Facebook doesn't fight. Facebook also has a transparency report. Google has a transparency report. They all fight. Twitter does more and more cleverly. But Twitter does other things that are odd. But I think Twitter is a model.
Some of the fighting from some of the companies looks like window dressing.
Facebook does not say in its transparency report, I don't think, specifically what the complaint is or what content it involves.
They can't. They're not allowed to. Look, Twitter Google's doesn't either. Google's is only allowed to say that they get between 1 and 900 requests from government, and that was after fighting.
Twitter will tell you what the order was, what it related to, and where it came from.
Not in a lot of cases. They cannot, Matthew. They'd be jailed. They can't.
They can't in cases where the U.S. government has asked them for data.
Right. If it's a national security letter, they have to shut up.
But if the Turkish government files a court order saying take down that thing because it makes fun of Kemal Ataturk, they can certainly say that, and they don't.
We're going to take a break.
Good timing.
When we come back.
I got to put my boxing gloves on.
No, this is a great topic, and I'm glad we had the conversation. But when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the changes from Google. Not the change log, because no one can do the change log like Gina Trapani. But there are some new things from Google we want to talk a little bit about. But first, a word from our friends at SmartThings. SmartThings had a great showing at CES this year. In fact, Time Magazine said SmartThings gave them their 2015 Editor's Choice Award. SmartThings is a kind of a neat story. There you go. Six of the coolest smart home innovations at CES. SmartThings right in there. And it's a great story because it was a Kickstarter project by some guys who said, we need to solve this problem of this Tower of Babel among home automation systems. There's Z-Wave and Zigbee. There's X10 and Nest. And Nest doesn't talk to anybody. So why don't we make something that could talk to everybody? They raised a lot of money, and they created a great product, the SmartThings Smart Hub. And they're getting better all the time. It talks to everything, your Sonos music, your Hue lights, your Nest thermostat, your Dropcam camera. It talks to all of the SmartThings devices as well. In fact, to make this easy, they've created these solution kits and home security kits that give you everything you need to solve a particular problem. But now all, and by the way, it's a great starting point because they all have the hub, like the Energy Saver Kit for $179.10 that, you know, saves you money by controlling how much energy you use, allowing you smartphone access to all the information. But your lights, your locks, your thermostats, your home security can all use that same app. Yes, it is awesome for iOS, for Android, and for Windows Phone. I think a lot of Windows Phone users feel a little left out. You don't have to. SmartThings supports you, too. Now you could tap good night on your phone. The lights turn off. The thermostat turns down. The doors lock. Garage doors close. Set your lamps to brighten each morning at sunrise or when you want to wake up. Even keep your home protected with SmartThings. Home security, motion detection, water detection, and more. You can even have your speakers bark. You can have dogs barking if there's motion outside the house.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I know. Your doors will recognize when you're close and unlock themselves as you walk up. SmartThings is really cool. And to get you started setting up your smart home right now, SmartThings is offering Twig users 10% off any home security or solution kit and free shipping in the U.S. But you have to go to smartthings.com/twit and use our offer code TWIT10 at checkout. smartthings.com/twit. You're minutes away from a smart home with smart things. Don't play the trumpets. We're just going to talk our way through the Google.
Play your kazoo.
I haven't gotten it yet, but Google is pushing out to all Android devices and iOS, too, a better Google Translate. I love this idea.
I got it.
Did you get it? Have you tried it?
I didn't try it. Let's see.
So they bought WordLens a while ago. That was the really cool iOS app that would let you see it's right there. Show a sign in a language you don't understand, and it will translate it. It even preserves the font and translates it into your language, which is very awesome. So you could snap a photo, too, of text to get a translation for it in 36 languages. English to and the instant translation that you're seeing with WordLens works from English to and from French, German, Italian, Portuguese, Russian, and Spanish. They're going to add more languages in time.
And they do real-time voice, too.
So this is really cool.
So should we try it? Should we try it? Here we go.
I don't speak a language. Who speaks a
German.
Language?
Say something in German.
Yeah. Where is the train station? You hear that?
Yeah, now you have to respond in German.
Es ist gerade aus.
It is straight ahead.
Whoa! So the idea is they've sped it up so that, first of all, it will. The first time you have to press a button, you tap the mic, you start speaking. It immediately recognizes what language you're speaking, which is nice. And then it goes back and forth much more quickly without you having to do anything. So you talk, they talk, you talk, they talk. Here's a demonstration.
Hello. How can I help you?
Good morning. I would like a cup of coffee.
Bonjour. Je voudrais une tasse de café.
Without milk or sugar.
Sans lait ni sucre.
Well, that was very quick.
It's like a
But here's the thing. You just turn it on its side. So I do it. Let me translate. So English to German. I would like a cup of coffee.
Yet again, eine Tasse Kaffee.
Möchten Sie Milch?
You want a milk?
Wow.
No, thank you. Just sugar.
Nein, danke, nur Zucker.
That's pretty neat. That's the Babel fish.
Exactly.
And it's instant.
Gross or klein?
Big and small.
Now, obviously, it's,
All I'm doing is turning the phone between each one. So I talk upright.
Oh, is that how you do it? Oh, okay.
He talks this way. So you just go back and forth.
That's how it knows who's talking.
I could have used that when I was in Italy. I got a ride from the train station with a guy who didn't speak any English at all other than hello. And so I said, where are we going? And he said,
to ISIS. Even a
little bit, however mangled or grammatically incorrect it is better than nothing. I mean, would you be embarrassed to use it? Would you feel like a weirdo using it?
No, I think everywhere except France.
In France, they just spit at you.
They would tell you. Though right now, everybody loves France, so I'm making no French jokes. Let's be very
clear
here.
It's been my experience. If you make the attempt in France, they're very kind.
They're great. Well, that's what I wonder. Would they think this is cheating?
Well, I would say start a conversation and then go, oh, pardon, je ne parle pas français, but my mobile does. And then, you know what? That might be kind of cool. I'm going to try it. I'm going to Europe in June. Going to Netherlands. I don't speak Dutch. Germany, don't speak German. And Austria. And, I'm also going to Istanbul. Don't speak Hungarian. I think that's
this is really cool. I remember
I want to use
when
it.
Eric Schmidt showed it at Davos like 4 years ago, saying this will stop war.
Well, I don't know about that.
A little far, a war,
actually.
What I want to do is put the picture part of this over the Charlie Hebdo covers and see if it can translate Charlie Hebdo.
Good idea.
This is interesting from the Google blog post about this. By the way, it would be Android and iOS, and some of these features have never been available before on iOS. So if you're an iOS user, definitely try it. This is the stat from the blog post. 500 million people use Google Translate every month. More than 1 billion translations a day.
Jesus.
It's kind of mind-boggling. So people do use this, obviously. I would guess a lot of it is on the web. I've used it a lot where you're reading a web page that says translate this page, you do that. That's probably the
or a snippet.
Or a snippet. Yeah, that's probably the majority of usage, but still.
And I remember when they added the ability to recognize the language automatically so you didn't have to choose from a drop-down.
Yeah, isn't that great? It's
super handy.
Why shouldn't it?
When I mentioned the Google Translate this morning on Twitter, someone said they wouldn't be impressed until it translated from Temarian, the Star Trek language that is solely metaphor-driven.
No, that's not going to
work. Darmok and Jalad.
Yeah, that's not going to work. Ever. Ever. All right, moving on with the change log.
You left the photo part out.
No, I mentioned Word Lens. We shared that. Okay, yeah. Google Domains has launched. This was a beta only for a while, but it's now here. If you go to domains.google.com, it still says beta, but you can register a domain name. They have hundreds of TLDs, $12 a year, which is, you know, kind of in there with the going price. It automatically works instantly with Blogger, Blogspot, but it also works with Shopify, Squarespace, Weebly, and Wix. So you just use their software and you're automatically in there. I don't know. Let's see. What should we get? What domain name should we get here? It's got a domain management feature. It's very much like any registrar. And we like Hover because they're good Canadian fellas and gals.
That's right.
But I don't know. I need a new. What do I need? Chris, what do you give me a domain name? You need a new domain name. How about Minecraft Today? That's going to be the name of your new show, Chris. Minecraft. No, I'm just kidding. Never doing another Minecraft show again. Minecraft. That's Minecraft fat is about to end, isn't it? Domain availability. Yes, I can get MinecraftToday.com, MinecraftToday.net, MinecraftToday.org. .company, .partners, there's quite a few choices. Look at that.
.today?
Should I get MinecraftToday.today? And then Minecraft Now? MinecraftToday.net? Look at these. And then they're just making up stuff. VideoGameToday.org? ModToday.net? YouTube? GubToday?
GubToday.
What the hell is that? Mine Art
YouTube,
Today.
Great Britain Today? Mine, I don't know.
TwitterToday.org. All right, TwitterToday.org. That's got to be worth something.
I can't search because I'm in Canada.
Oh, it's US only?
Not entitled.
What do you want? You want .ninja? This Week in Google? All right. Let's see what we can get with This Week. Actually, I don't know if that search works. That looks like a regular Google search. Oh, now I'm lost. You know, somebody ought to teach these guys usability. I got to go back to the original. Domains.google.com. I'm not sure why Google wants to be in this business, but it makes more sense than the insurance business, which they apparently also want to be in.
Yeah, I don't understand the whole domain thing. I mean, I don't know. Maybe domainers are a big market.
I can't imagine. Well, GoDaddy's made some money. I can't imagine. Look, This Week in Google.com. No, somebody's got that. But .net, .org, .company, .training, madmentwitter.com. I don't know where they get that from. Now they're just making crap up. Mad Men website. Did I mention Mad Men? All right, there you go. Domains.google.com. That's another new thing.
They checked your birth certificate information. That's why they suggested Mad Men.
Oh, is that it? They know you must have been born in the 50s. Google and GoDaddy is probably the largest of the rest of the registrars. Google was ICANN accredited in 2005.
Oh,
so they could have done this for a while.
Wow.
They might have done it internally. I wonder.
They locked up a bunch of those extensions.
Right.
And I still don't know why, but .blog.
Well, because that maybe they want to sell them on the, you know, domains.google.com.
Well, you know, there is a .google, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And if they never sell it, it just seems a bit odd to me that they own an entire subdomain.
Yeah, right. Subdomain. Me too. They did say they were going to open a bunch of them. I don't know if that ever happened, but they said like .blog and a bunch of those they were going to open up so they wouldn't control.
To me, if you have a subdomain, it should be required to be open or don't have it.
And I would hope that Google wouldn't in any way prioritize and search the domains you purchase on the Google domain site, but I'm sure they wouldn't.
That's ridiculous. Well, for $12 a year, yeah. We're going to throw out our entire business model for $12 a year for one person per domain. That's absurd.
Moving on, Google. Go ahead.
Sorry, I should point out BlackBerry came out and said that it is not in talks with Samsung.
Yeah.
And the stock dropped.
Course.
The stock went right back down. Oh, well. We've seen this. I mean, if you do a search for Google for BlackBerry Samsung, you'll find references to an acquisition or merger since 2012. It's been going on.
I bet a bunch of traders made some money today, though.
Yeah, you know, that's how you make some money. That's a very clever idea. Google's rolling out a classroom mobile app for students and teachers, saying, of course, if the dog has actually eaten your homework, classroom cannot help. But never. this is the classroom we talked about 6 months ago, but this is the mobile version. Here's the promo clip. Google Classroom mobile app. Snap a photo. So there you're doing a chemistry lab, and you've got colors and smoke. You say, take a photo. This is in the Google Apps. Experiment photo, chemistry 101, done. I don't know what you got out of that you couldn't do otherwise, but there you go.
Well, yeah. Well, that's – I know I'm going off the change, whatever we call it now. But Google going into the classroom with that kind of app and Facebook announcing Facebook for Work – it's really interesting to me that they're taking these, they're trying to take basic functionality that already exists that you can use for anything you darn want, whether it's work or school, and then try to declare it work or school. And I'm not sure how much they have to add to make that true.
Well, I think for schools, certainly there are privacy issues that you have to be aware of. Kids under 13, there's special rules on the web, et cetera, et cetera. So it makes sense that you know, this is a big category that's not very well served. You know, commercial products like Blackboard and open source products like Moodle are kind of not great. And I think Google probably looked at it and said, we could do better.
And a lot of the stuff in that market has been proprietary, like way more proprietary than Google, to the point where you have to get locked in, you know, SAP style to some thing that then your kid can't get any of their data out in the teacher can't share with teachers who use a different system. I'd love to see Google open some of that up.
Our local elementary school uses G-Apps, and all the kids get Chromebooks.
Really?
The local high school that I'm on the board of, even though they're giving MacBooks in their one-to-one program, they're absolutely using Google Apps, Google Mail, everything Google.
My wife... my wife and I are touring preschools right now. Not preschools, kindergarten through six, through eight. And I mean, as early as I think like fourth grade, they're giving them Chromebooks.
Yep. Really?
Yeah. I think that's great.
I have visions of Leo. I have visions actually of Leo standing outside the school laughing at the kids.
No. I have come around. I think it's great. I love it.
I know you have.
And I always said this is good for a school. Or anywhere where you want to constrain what people can do. I've always said that.
In fact, I don't think we talked about this. It was on the rundown 2 weeks ago or whatever. The LA school district, of course, had done iPads.
Yes.
And that was an utter disaster. Well, and so they're switching to Chromebooks.
Also because of corruption. It turns out.
Yes.
There might have been that bid process might not have been as fair as one thinks.
I went into my daughter's classroom and the teacher had brought in her old computer from like 6 years ago, and that's what they had in the classroom.
Yeah, that's very
common.
By the way,
I want to correct myself. Obviously, I didn't mean subdomains. I meant TLDs, top level domains. Right. Thank you.
reference. Knew what you meant.
Oh, God, I didn't even notice.
Yeah, I said.
If you used iOS, which you don't, you might want to try this Chrome Remote Desktop for iOS. They must have it for Android already, right?
They do, yeah. I just installed it last night on my iPad, actually.
So it allows
you... But it seems kind of ridiculous. Why do you need... Because you can have all your stuff anywhere,
right?
Why do you need a remote desktop to a Chrome device?
Well, yeah, I actually use it. This might seem like a weird use case, but if I'm downstairs and I have stuff on the computer upstairs, I've actually looked at it on the iPad to remind myself what was going on, like to try and return to the state of mind I had when I was looking at that computer, or to reboot something or restart something.
So, you know what? It just makes it easier. Everything's more fluid.
And it is really easy. I've used remote desktop apps for decades at VNC and all sorts of, proprietary. Yeah. This was super slick on every device.
So you start by adding a Chrome extension, the Chrome Remote Desktop app, they call it now. And you enable remote access. You give it a PIN so only you can get to it.
Yeah.
And then you launch the app on iOS or Android, and it sees it on your network and says, oh, which one would you like to join?
And you can say, don't ask me for a PIN anymore on this device.
Nice.
And it was fast.
Yeah. I'm definitely doing this. I don't know why, but I am.
Because it's cool.
It's cool. Yeah. Now, if I install the Chrome extension on any one of my Chromes, it installs across the board, too, which is kind of nice.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, oh, my overlord Google, for once again convincing me of the value.
I was actually thinking of getting my mom a Chromebook and then just run Chrome Remote Desktop on that.
Oh, clever. So you could fix it and stuff. Can you do it over the network? No, you have to be on the LAN.
You do?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think so.
Oh.
Oh, well, maybe you do. Hmm.
Well, a lot of remote desktops you can do over a network.
Can someone in the chat room figure out whether that's true?
Would you figure that out, chat room? We're confused.
Can you get back to me?
Project Era, which I've mocked because I don't feel like anybody really wants a modular smartphone that you could take like apart like a Tinker Toy. But it's going to begin pilot testing in Puerto Rico later this year. This was kind of a skunkworks project. It was part of Motorola. Google kept it when they sold Motorola to Lenovo. Right now, as we speak, the second Project Era Developers Conference is going on. And this will give you a roadmap of how and when the modular smartphones will get on the market.
Something about this is appealing to me.
Oh, it's cool. But I feel like I don't want to carry around a phone that's going to fall apart as I'm walking around. Little modules are going to shed off of it. Oh, man, I dropped my speaker module.
Night vision, you can look through people's clothes. Yeah, I don't know.
If you're in Puerto Rico, Open Mobile and Claro will, I guess, are they going to sell it like a smartphone?
It'd be easier to upgrade, right? Then you could just upgrade modules instead of the whole thing.
That's the key.
But look how ugly your phone is. This is an ugly-ass phone. It's not new. Remember the LifeSpring modules for the...
Oh, right. Right.
The LifeSpring Palm. Anyway, you know what? It might be very cool. I don't know.
Palm is coming back.
Let me put it this way. When you can buy one, you will, Leo.
Oh, I'll buy one, but I don't know if it'll ever be my, main phone. Here's Dita Bone from The Verge looking at it. You know this guy's a designer because he's wearing eyeglasses with white frames. And he has no hair. That's the designer giveaway. If he had a scarf, we'd know he was definitely.
I think you'd look good with white glasses, Leo.
I'm going to get white glasses to go with my white hair. Yeah. It's kind of an interesting idea. So we'll watch.
Handspring did that, didn't it? Handspring.
That's what it was. Yeah. Not LifeSpring. Handspring. The Handspring modules. I have a Handspring over here. You could add a modem.
Mm-hmm.
You could add, it was really a Palm Pilot that you could add a phone to, or a but only one at a time. So this one you can kind of plug and play it all together. We could, if you want, there is a live stream. If you go to projectera.com, you can watch the live stream of the dev conference. And a new MDK has been released. So if you want to get developing, you can. I think open hardware is a very interesting category. I'm not against it. Let's see. Oh, Facebook at work. You brought this up.
Yeah.
I had an insight. Yeah, me.
I love those moments. I wait for them. I live for them.
I had an insight. I was thinking about this because this was on Windows Weekly. We were talking about it. Just as the iPhone really changed enterprise computing because of bring your own device, employees started saying, no, I'm not going to use that crappy BlackBerry or Windows phone you issued me. I'm going to use my own iPhone, and I'm going to bring it into the enterprise. And it forced IT managers and CIOs to even acknowledge that it existed and then embrace it. And now iPhones and iPads are everywhere in enterprise. And I have to think Mark Zuckerberg's thinking, hey, BYOD, what about BYOS? Users are used to using Facebook. They love Facebook. They probably already are using Facebook a little bit for business communications. What if we made a business-specific version of Facebook that, it, in effect, is a leverage or web a wedge into enterprise?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because this is people want to use what they use. They don't want to use some special HipChat or whatever. They want to use what they use. Now, interestingly, there's no messaging in Facebook for work, so you still need HipChat. But that makes sense to me. And also, it's a beta. What they said is, well, we've been dog fooding this for 10 years is what we use at Facebook.
I also think they probably saw what's been happening with Slack. How that's been.
Stuart Butterfield's startup. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. They've been signing up enterprise customers like it's going out of style. The chart on that thing usage wise is just mind boggling. And so I think I'm sure they thought we've got to get a piece of that. Even if we can't, get all of it or crush Slack, we need to at least be in there.
Well, it's not too much of a stretch to think of them adding, WhatsApp into this mix. Mm-hmm. And
right.
And making an enterprise. And, of course, enterprise has requirements. It needs to be a walled garden. You can't, you want it to be an intranet, not an internet. You want it to be secure. There's a lot of need, just as with schools and classroom apps, there's special needs. I think this makes a lot of sense for Facebook. This is like Facebook leaving the colleges and going out to the public.
There is a potential, too. I mean, assuming they can get their newsfeed algorithm working properly inside the enterprise, at least there's a potential for them to become a kind of, central dashboard, information dashboard, where you can find all the stuff that's relevant to your company. That's a huge value. LinkedIn, right. I'm sure is
quaking. They're doing something similar to, yeah.
Right, because that's what they want to own.
Yeah. If you think about it, it makes perfect sense. People want to use what they're familiar with. They don't want to learn a mm-hmm. specialized tool. But businesses have certain needs. I have needs. And it makes sense that Facebook, just as they do with my personal needs, want to satisfy enterprises' needs.
So you'll have, I predict now, you're going to have the case where I meant to post that half-naked
yeah.
picture.
Right.
My personal, not to my work.
But that can happen anyway, right?
Or my puppy.
Well, not if you're not using Facebook for work.
Right. I posted, we were using HipChat for a conversation, and then I was talking about I remember I was on this show, I think we were talking about those acronyms that teenagers use, like get naked on camera. So I posted them into our HipChat, which is our business chat.
Oops.
Well, that's okay, because we've got one of our people immediately said, ignore Leo, he's just showing off something in Twig. Hey, congratulations to Amazon, by the way. Transparent won a Golden Globe Award, and rightly so, by the way. It's a really great show. I haven't watched it yet.
I feel so behind.
Jeffrey Tambor is wonderful in it.
He's great.
He plays the dad of a totally dysfunctional family who's decided to finally live as a woman, something he's felt that he is all along. And the kids, it's comedic. It's very funny. And, in fact, I thought that's what it would be about because the name is Transparent and all of that. But really, it's as much about his totally dysfunctional family. And mm-hmm. each of them have their own awful quirks. His ex-wife, who's equally awful. It's a great, great show. And Jeffrey Tambor deserved the Golden Globe, I think. He did a great job.
And I didn't know the writer, her father, it's the character's
it's her story
based on her father. Yeah,
I believe that because it's you can see it's deeply felt, and it's very insightful, and a great show. And it's Amazon only, and so it's a huge victory. And of course, if you go to Amazon, they're touting it like a like they've just won the World Series. It's all over.
Well, that's
the
a big deal.
It's a very big deal for us. And now Amazon's. By the way, they've been doing great stuff. Both Netflix and Amazon have totally proven that you don't need to be a cable network. You don't need to be a broadcast network to produce great programming. I love House of Cards. It's coming back. I love Orange is the New Black. Amazon has Alpha House, which is incredibly funny. They've got some great shows. I've been watching.
Let me ask you a question, Leo.
Yeah.
I have argued, you have argued that Google is in a position of conflict. I've argued that Google can't really own and create content, and that really they don't, that YouTube is a platform. So here's Amazon, which is the primary media sales operation in the world now, and it's making its own content, and I don't hear the squeals there.
Why should you? Because Amazon's a retailer. Amazon sells its own stuff all the time, and also, I mean, I would squeal.
Well, that's what I'm, so compare it to Google.
But Amazon's but see, that's different.
Google's not even trying to sell stuff. They're just
pointing different.
Stuff.
Google's trying to be a objective search engine. Amazon's never said anything but, hey, what we do
Who
is we sell stuff for money. Well, that's what I want it to be objective. Don't you want Google to be objective? If you're going to rely on it,
to be relevant. Objective means it's the same for everybody. No, they're not claiming that. They're claiming it's relevant to you.
But in the beginning, they claimed it was objective.
I would hope.
No, it's not paid. You cannot pay for it. What they claim is.
Well, what's the difference between paid and Google saying, well, our content's better than others?
Well, I'm not saying that you've proven that they do that.
No, they haven't. But that's the real fear is that they will. And, you know, that's why it's a conflict
of interest. But Amazon, so I'm making my own TV show. You're making your own podcast. And now Amazon says,
fine.
I'm not going to promote yours. I'm going to promote mine.
They're not a search engine. They're a store.
They're the only way you can get sold if you make certain things now, books and such.
If they become a monopoly, that's an issue.
And they are a retailer. I mean, the central difference is Google did not start off as a retailer.
Right. This is their business. And they've done this, by the way. Amazon makes cables, too. They make a lot of things.
By the way, I'm not complaining that Amazon shouldn't make this stuff. I'm just trying to compare.
It's not comparable. You lose.
I think it is.
I disagree. I disagree. It doesn't bother me. Well, see, and here's the other thing. If you're in the content creation business, there are a million competitors creating content. I'm not mad at Google because they want to be in the – if they wanted to be in the content creation business, have at it. But drop the search business because the search – the directory is what allows people to discover us. I don't need Amazon to be discovered.
If you're an author, you do.
Well, but – and then you have an argument. Then you have an
argument. That's what I'm saying.
And Amazon is, by the way, going into the publishing business as well, aren't they?
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So if we talk about the standards around Google and what they and oh my God, Google's promoting its own stuff. What I'm saying is, of course they do, and it's obvious when they do. Right. But they also promote their competitors. Now Amazon also promotes its competitors, by the way, right? I mean, it allows anybody
absolutely.
To sell cheaper prices.
And you know what? They'd be out of business if they only sold Amazon originals on their video store.
Oh, goddamn.
As good as they are, there's other stuff I want to see. By the way, this all came up because they just signed Woody Allen to do his very first TV series, which is going to be called, in a kind of sly inside joke, The Untitled Woody Allen Project.
Mm. I'm sorry, but the obvious joke here is next they're going to sign Bill Cosby.
It is the obvious joke.
I said they should do a duo. They should do a,
All right. I don't want to get in this conversation.
Yeah.
I don't think it's comparable.
No.
I think the claims against Woody Allen.
I know. I
can
agree.
Be questioned.
I agree, but in terms of shamed and questioned celebrities.
Right.
There's a club there.
Yeah. Yeah. And no, I have to admit, I'm a little queasy going to a Woody Allen movie these days.
I did like his comment, though, where he said, I don't know why they did this, and I think it's probably going to turn out badly, and I don't really have any ideas.
He says, my guess is Roy Price, who is the VP of Amazon Studios, will regret this. That's Woody, though. You love Woody. He's totally self-deprecating.
Certainly setting expectations low.
Yeah,
so.
You know people will watch it. And frankly, if they got Cosby to do a show, you know people would watch it, but then stop buying things on Amazon, so...
Yeah. I mean, I used to be a gigantic fan of Woody Allen. I also think that he's not quite what he was, but.
But, well, Yeah, it's none of our business what to discuss the allegations against him.
But the
it's not allegations. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the fact, just the known fact that he's
not as good as he used to be.
Dated his stepdaughter.
What he did is married his
stepdaughter. Married his stepdaughter, but they didn't live together. She lived down the road.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Sure.
I mean, you can not like somebody because he married a very young woman who was, in fact, his stepdaughter, but that's not illegal. The other allegations that he molested his stepdaughter are illegal.
Yeah. I'm just talking about the factor.
Yeah.
That's all.
And lots of his movies, you know, he's continued to age. And the people that he's romantically involved with in the movies.
Okay, that's a little creepy.
Get younger.
But again, that's not illegal. Just creepy.
Mm-hmm. No.
And I think some of his later movies are great. I love the Midnight in Paris was one of his best movies, I thought.
Yeah, that's true.
Did you not like that, Jeff?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, that one I liked.
But one reason I liked it was because he wasn't in it.
Right. Yeah, he should stop being in his movies. I don't know if he'll be in the TV show. I guess he will.
I need to watch Annie Hall again and see if it holds up.
Oh, it holds up.
Oh, it totally holds
up. Absolutely holds up.
I would imagine it does.
Bananas, not so much. let's see. I think we've covered everything. Artificial intelligence experts are all signing a letter saying, we've got to protect mankind from machines.
Skynet.
Skynet.
I'm going to run a dinner session of this at Davos next week. And so this was interesting to me.
Oh, this will be interesting. What's it called? What's it about?
Man versus machine kind of thing.
I love
it. And there's two AI robotic people. There's the Archbishop of Ireland. A technology historian and a biological, I can print organs for you guy. They're going to be the discussion leaders, and it'll be fascinating. It'll be absolutely interesting. And the good thing about it is there's no techno panic representative there. There'll be people in the room who'll be saying, "Oh my God!" But here are the technologists, and so the discussion that I want to have is, okay, you're all making these technologies, and same as this letter in a way. How do you protect us? You presume you can, because otherwise you wouldn't be doing it. You think it's evil. So talk about what are you going to do to make all this okay so that we can take advantage of these technologies?
I want to point you to two books. These are two people we've interviewed on triangulation on this subject. The first is a guy named James Barrett, who wrote a book called Our Final Invention, Artificial Intelligence and the End of the Human Era. He's a journalist. He's not a scientist, but he did interview a lot of experts in AI, many of whom I think agree that we've got to tread lightly here because there's a big risk. I asked Ray Kurzweil about that because he's one of the people who believes that the singularity is nigh and that the machines will be as smart as humans any day now. And he said, oh, don't worry. The machines will think of us as mom and dad. They'll take care of us.
Right.
I agree with that.
I heard him speak at Google, and he said basically we're not going to get there in the way that you think.
That doesn't mean we don't have to worry. Here's the other one. Nick Bostrom is a this is a guy actually with a very interesting CV. He's not just a computer scientist. He does a lot of stuff, but his book Superintelligence really talks about these issues. It's a really good book, and he was fascinating. And he is a guy who is working in this field. He's a professor at the at Oxford, and director of the Future of Humanity Institute there. So, very interesting fella.
Ask the people at your event what they think a Google self-driving car should do. If sacrificing the occupants of the car would actually prevent more deaths than not sacrificing.
We've talked about this on the show, haven't we, Jeff?
Yeah. We have. But it's a hard calculation to make with surety.
Well, does this self-driving car look and say, well, if I swerve into the lane with the bus, I could kill 20 people. But if I drive off the cliff on the right, I'll only kill the guy inside.
Right.
So, you know, the smart thing overall societally would be drive off the cliff.
I mean, you saw that amazing video of the, 169 car pileup in Michigan?
Yeah.
phenomenal, phenomenal video. And you wonder,
is that
what
the one where the firecracker truck blew up? Was that
yes.
the one?
Yes. And you see these vehicles come barreling down, and man, there is nothing they can do. They've got 2 seconds, no. and they smash on top of things. What would a self-driving universe look like? They wouldn't be barreling down the road, I don't think. And they'd also be in connection with what's ahead of them, saying, "Whoa,
exactly.
better slow down now."
Yeah.
I'm going to find the video now.
Oh, you haven't seen this? Oh, God.
Waze should have told them that was coming.
Well, but I think a smart car would, of course, do a better job than humans in an environment like that, right?
Yeah, it would have data from ahead. You'd be networked. It's the network would save you.
Here is this it? The fireworks go off following the accident? No, now we have to watch tennis. Come on, Google.
It's a funny commercial.
It's the John McEnroe commercial? Yeah.
That's a funny one.
It's a Chase commercial.
At least.
Yeah. All right. Since Chase is done, we get to see this fiery...
A little free advertising for...
Fiery wreck from the Ann Arbor News.
Well, that's the company I work with.
Really?
Yeah, Advance. Oh, is this the...
No, this
is a different one.
This is later.
Yeah, this is later. Well, that's the fireworks going off. Yeah, you can hear them.
It is funny, although people were injured.
Okay, I'm sorry that people were hurt, but...
But it is. No, it is funny.
This is straight out of a Warner Brothers cartoon. I think self-driving cars are, I think, demonstrably better drivers than humans. So lives are saved right off the bat. That car, the Audi that drove 500 miles to CES, pretty impressive.
Not bad.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, I see at least for me, the earliest benefit from self-driving cars would be things like, you know, everybody's at a party downtown and you want to get somewhere. And so you don't have a designated driver. You don't want to call a cab. You know, self-driving car can take you wherever. And the other thing is delivery. Think about all the trucks, UPS trucks that could be automated.
Yeah.
They really don't need a human being, right? They're just dropping off a package.
Yeah.
I found the video here, Leo. I put it in the chat in the rundown.
Oh, good. Do you want to?
On the bottom of that page.
Do you want to? You want to play it?
I can't.
No, no. I'm talking to Jason.
I know you are.
He's the magic man.
Let's hope we don't get sacked with an ad. Okay.
Wow. No, but worse. Hey, vertical watch, video.
Watch, yeah.
Watch
vertical
cars coming. Oh. Yeah, and this is nothing to jest about because...
No. One person was killed. That was all.
Yeah, truck driver.
Ugh.
Just that horrible sound.
As they're going full speed.
Well, they... on snow in the fog, it seems...
In a blinding snow.
Humans are not the best drivers in the world.
No.
In the world, what am I talking about?
Well,
on Mars, we're fine.
And listen to the guy on the phone. He's saying, oh, no.
This does happen.
Right. And they're also saying, get out, because they know there's somebody behind you coming.
Right.
This happens regularly near where I live.
Oh, I'm sure it does.
Near the circle.
And, it happens here in drizzle.
But snow squalls come up very quickly. Oof, so you can be in a clear area. And then all of a sudden, there's a squall, and on the other side of that is a truck that jackknifed.
Yeah, horrible. I want to. I want a self-driving car. I have kind of, for the most part, a self-driving car. It warns me if I try to switch lanes with another car in the lane. It warns me if I drift out of the lanes. It starts to vibrate the steering wheel. It has adaptive cruise control, so I can just turn on cruise control and close my eyes because. If the car in front of me slows down, my car will slow down. If it stops, my car will stop. Yeah.
That's interesting.
It keeps it keeps a following distance that's really the right following distance, which is
what kind of car is it?
It's an Audi. It's surprising because, God, I'm far behind. Really? I should be this far? Yes, you should. You should
stay
back.
Did you see the Tesla video where it reads the speed sign and automatically decreases speed?
Yeah, that's cool. I want that.
What happens if a Google self-driving car is potentially going to be an accident? That would only kill the occupants of a Microsoft self-driving car.
Computers are smart enough. So, by the way, somebody says, that's not cool, Leo. You shouldn't close your eyes. I don't really close my eyes. I think I'm nuts. So you still have to steer, Leo. No. It's a joke. We're going to take a break, and we shall return with picks
whether you
and
want
tips
us to or not.
Yeah, but briefly, only briefly. Our show today brought to you by Personal Capital, which is a great solution for anybody planning for the future. Anybody who wants to protect their investments, their bank accounts, it's a free and secure tool. You go to personalcapital.com/twig right now. You can sign up for free. You'll enter in your accounts. That's safe, by the way, and secure. In fact, it's better because it lets you monitor all your accounts in one place in real time. So even those accounts you check maybe once a year, like your investment accounts. So, and by the way, those are the accounts the fraudsters love. With daily alerts, easy access from any device, a dashboard, a single-page screen that tells you everything about what's going on, you're going to love Personal Capital. And, by the way, it'll give you alerts on your Android watch, your iOS or Android device, your desktop computer. You'll be able to keep an eye on your broker and bank, keep an eye on fees and charges, because those can eat away at your retirement. Keep your identity safe, spot credit card fraud, find and eliminate high mutual fund and 401k fees. It lets you plan for the future, grow your wealth so you can enjoy life in your later years. Personal Capital, I want you to sign up free today. It just takes a minute, and you will love it. PersonalCapital.com/twig. It's free and the smart way to grow your money. PersonalCapital.com/twig. We love it. You will, too. Well, normally we would do Gina's tip here. I think we're going to have to rejigger how we do these things. Let's let Matthew Ingram of Giga Ohm. Great to have you here, Matthew. Is there anything you'd like to talk about? A movie you saw? A book you read?
A snowflake you admired?
Well, I did see The Imitation Game.
You know, we should talk about that.
And I mentioned when I got home that the first thing I was going to do, I know a little bit about Alan Turing, but not that much. The first thing I was going to do was research how much of the movie is just Hollywood BS and how much of it is actually what Turing was like. And unfortunately, a lot of the movie
it's
is
pretty bad.
Yes, and the picture that it sort of paints of Turing is not is unfair in a lot of ways and goes for the sort of easy, you know, he was a nerd who couldn't mix with people and all, none of which I think was as the way it's portrayed in the movie. But, you know, it was good, and Benedict Cumberbatch.
It's a wonderful movie. He is great. The acting is great. But as The Guardian points out, in a way, the movie slanders Alan Turing. And what's sad is that Alan Turing was persecuted and slandered and reviled by Britain, even though he made a huge contribution to the war effort and, frankly, to the industry we love so much, to the invention of computing.
It's the father of modern computing.
It's the father of modern computing. And so while I loved the movie and I had the same reaction as you, Matthew, I thought, well, this is based on a well-known biography. It must be accurate. There's some horrific things that they do, the chief of which, and I won't give you a spoiler, but in effect, the movie implies that, you know, the movie, which is very much at the end, you know, it says tens of thousands of Britons were put in jail for homosexuality, and that, you know, he was persecuted. He was chemically castrated and eventually committed suicide because of the harassment in the 50s. So they're in some ways doing the right thing by kind of letting people know how awful that was. But there's a moment in which he's blackmailed by a spy. And the spy says, I'll tell him you're gay. And he goes, okay. And he not only breaks the law, but acts in a cowardly fashion to hide the spy's identity. And none of that happened.
Right. None of that happened. Yeah.
So that's the slander that The Guardian is talking about.
And actually, you know, the thing that bugged me was that he, you know, they go for the sort of easy trope of the nerd genius who doesn't understand a joke and can't make friends, none of which was apparently the case,
right?
According to other things I've read,
right?
So that's a kind of easy stereotype, but it doesn't really. I wish someone would make a movie where they celebrate his accomplishments. They don't even tell you how the Enigma Breaker worked.
Right.
They don't even discuss all the things that he, you know, the things that he did that were groundbreaking. He just seems like a giant nerd who builds this thing and then. Right. Wins the war. It's not anyway, so it was disappointing in that sense.
I found it a wonderfully entertaining movie, and I love Benedict Cumberbatch. But
he's great; does a good job.
And it will he will get an Oscar nomination, no doubt about it. Might even win. But for those of us who want to honor Alan Turing's memory for the amazing contributions he made,
not great for that.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. And once I read this article, I went, oh.
Yeah, and I get the feeling, like most people probably won't. So on the good side, they'll be exposed to, oh, there was a guy named Alan Turing, and he was persecuted, and he did these amazing things. But they'll, you know, the picture of him they will get will not be sort of realist.
You know, they did the same thing with Mark Zuckerberg and in the social network. And
and it was wrong.
It was wrong. And and in fact, they made up the whole basis of the movie was that his girlfriend dumped him. And in fact, it's not true. He's married to her now. But
I'm binge watching The Good Wife, which I
me too.
Great show.
Love it.
And so in the second season, they have just a copy of, then they say it up, they make a reference up front to Zuckerberg, but it's exactly the same story.
Right. Yeah.
And it's a guy fighting and the stupid screenwriter is saying, I don't care about the facts. I care about the truth.
Wow. I can't wait. You know, the show, I'm in first season. It starts off like a traditional kind of procedural lawyer show. And it's actually pretty bad. Like all the crimes get solved by kind of this deus ex machina that appears. Oh, look, here's a clue. Oh, he's exonerated. But then around episode 17 of the first season, it suddenly gets ambiguous and interesting. And then it starts to deal with some really,
really good.
Yeah,
I watched. The weird thing was, I wanted to watch. So I thought I'd watch it from both ends. So I watched we're in season six now. I watched all of season five. I watched I was watching one, trying not to buy it. And I finally gave up and I'm buying every season.
It's all on Amazon Prime for free.
I know, but I'm on airplanes.
Oh, airplanes.
So I've just bought the damn seasons, and I'm watching it. So I'm full. I'm season and a half now at the beginning, and trying not to watch the end. but I know I have my own spoilers. It's a really weird way to watch. But each show is really good. It's superb.
And Alan Cumming is wonderful.
She's really good.
She's wonderful. It's a great.
And Alan Cumming,
you don't fall in love with her.
Anything with Alan Cumming in it, I'll just watch. I don't care.
I think I'm gonna go see Cabaret. He's in.
I saw him in Cabaret in the old Studio 54. Some years
ago.
It's great. He's wonderful. Yeah. I can't remember who played
Emma
Sally.
Stone is now.
Yeah, see, that would be good. The person I saw play Sally Bowles was not an actor. She was like a celebrity, and so that wasn't great. It was somebody like Annie Wilson from Heart or something. It was somebody just like a random, oh, this will sell tickets kind of a thing. But he is great. So people are pointing out, by the way, that the other movie for nerds that everybody should watch is The Theory of Everything, the Stephen Hawking story, which I haven't seen. Have you seen that, Matthew?
No, I haven't, but I really want to because I heard Eddie Redmayne does an amazing job.
You know, he'll win the Oscar because that's how you win an Oscar if you want.
Yeah, playing disabled people
guarantees you an Oscar.
Yep.
But it does look like he does an amazing job. And that one, I think, is a little more accurate. It's a little harder to slander somebody who's still alive. Well, maybe not. Yeah. Actually, Zuckerberg.
And they do go into the fact that he dumped his wife.
Right.
Which is...
I have to watch
so they
this.
Don't try to paper that over.
Right. Mr. Jarvis, you have a number?
Yeah, I have a few. Where is it? Okay. So two things that I found fascinating. One is, I didn't know this, according to R.W. Baird, analyst, Google's desktop search revenue is now below 50% of Google's total revenue.
Whoa.
I heard reaction. And the other little point that I thought was interesting here, and I'm going to start the street and it's going to play a video to me, which I hate, is that this says, Credit Suisse analyst says that Google Play's revenue run rate at $4 billion is equivalent to Google's YouTube revenue run rate of $4 billion.
Oh, what does that mean?
Well, it just means, A, the Play is a hidden gem for the company.
It's going to make money for the company.
But B, this says that, you know, everybody thinks that Google, 98% of Google revenue is advertising. True. But Google and people think Facebook is moving ahead fast on mobile. True. But Google is more mixed and diverse in its revenue than I would have thought.
Yeah. That's good. So good. That whole content strategy working
even
good.
Even as search, because they Google lost Firefox as the default search, it lost some market share. But you know, flea on the butt of the elephant.
I got a crazy tool for you. When the HTC announced this little doohickey, we thought they were insane. This is the HTC RE. It looks like a little periscope or an asthma inhaler.
Yeah, I thought it was a puffer, maybe.
Yeah, it looks like a puffer, but it's actually a camera. And it's kind of the logical successor to the Flip Cam or something like that. Maybe it's not exactly a GoPro. It's a weird thing, but look, here, I'll show you. If you can get the over-the-shoulder shot, it ties to Android or iOS. So I have a viewfinder here. Now, it's not great for stills, but it's actually kind of a decent movie camera. And because it just sits there, you know, you don't need a tripod. It's really easy. And they added a feature, which I kind of think puts this over the top, makes it very interesting, live YouTube streaming. So if I check this box, I've already set up my YouTube account to receive it and press the record button, I am now streaming live on YouTube. I mean, talk about an interesting and simple way to start vlogging or...
Wow.
I don't know what.
Is that out in the market now?
Yeah. Now, it's pricey. Wow. In fact, it's overpriced. It's $179 on Amazon. I think $200 is the list. I wouldn't use it as a still camera, probably. In fact, I probably wouldn't. I don't even know if it's as a movie camera it'd be that valuable. But it's really intriguing as a streamer. It's just like you could start vlogging like instantly and create a YouTube. I don't know. I found this really intriguing, and I have to admit I was skeptical about it. There's some cool features. I'm going to review it fully on Before You Buy next week, but there's some cool features. One, it's always on. It's got a touch sensor in the body, so when you pick it up, it wakes up.
Oh, cool.
So you don't have to. You can pick it up and take a picture right away just by pressing that button.
Are you still streaming to YouTube? Okay, so it finally came up on YouTube.
It takes about 30 seconds to get going on YouTube.
There we go. Okay.
So if you go to my YouTube site, youtube.com/Leo Laporte.
Yeah, it took a little bit to appear.
As much of a lag as I have on the show.
Well, it has to encode and stream, and YouTube has to receive it. It's using YouTube Live. Oh, is it not?
Come on, YouTube. We believe in you.
You can only stream half an hour at a time. Audio's pretty good. Listen. I don't know. I found this really intriguing, and I have to admit I was skeptical about it. There's some cool features. I'm going to review.
That sounds good, doesn't it?
I could do video.
So does it record in its own memory, or does it?
Yeah, you have it comes with an SD card, 8-gig SD card. You can put up to 128 gig, micro SD in it. So it has plenty of recording space. But you tie it to your smartphone with their re-app, and then you've got a viewfinder and the ability to stream. It streams through this, right? It streams through the phone. It works much better on Wi-Fi. Wasn't really able to do much streaming on LTE, but very interesting.
So I got a gadget too, Leo.
All right.
I asked myself, what's the most obnoxious thing that I could do?
What is it?
I can take a selfie stick.
Oh, no.
The selfie stick.
That's technically called the wand of Narcissus.
Don't stroke your wand of Narcissus there.
I thought going around Davos with a selfie stick would be the most magnificent, obnoxious thing I could do. So I got that.
Well, let me just point out that the RE has a tripod thread in the bottom, and it will work with a selfie stick as well.
Nice.
And so I think I might put this on a selfie stick too, it just kind of naturally follows you around. Look at that.
You need a belfie stick.
You've seen that, the butt selfie stick?
Yeah.
It has a little angle. Let's try it. Let's just see. Here's my selfie stick. I got one too, Jarvis!
Oh, man.
Jeez. Oh, I got one too! Now how much would you pay? Close this whole studio down. You're all fired. I've got everything I need with my selfie stick and my HTC RE.
It'd be better if it had a extendable, you know, on the actual camera.
It should be its own selfie stick.
Or like a flex head, you know, that could move around.
It's got a battery that goes about an hour and a half, but you can get an extended battery. And as I said, the YouTube stream is limited, probably because of Google, to 30 minutes. But I don't know. It's kind of funny. Good. So when are you going to Davos, Mr. Jay?
Next week.
So will you be here from Davos, or what are we going to do?
I think that's going to – I hate to leave you
It's going to be – soon it's going to be a one-person show.
Yes,
I know, but the problem is they have me doing that dinner until 10 o'clock.
Yeah, that's all right.
Until show start.
That's all right.
Up the street.
So, Matthew, can you come next week too?
Leo, I'm happy to do it, and I'm never go anywhere.
We love you, Matthew. We love you. And you have no plans to have a baby anytime in the near future.
Not to my knowledge.
Or a startup.
No.
Okay.
And I'm not getting a selfie stick either.
And he's not getting a selfie stick either. Matthew Egram, we love Matthew.
That would be very un-Canadian to have a selfie stick, yes. Which is why I love you.
Apparently, they're coming to the United States. This is going to be the summer of the selfie stick in the U.S.
Oh, no.
I saw them all over Europe.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Yeah. Matthew writes for GigaOhm. He is the guy. You got to read him, GigaOhm.com. I'm sorry, Matthew?
Look at the oatmeal. Did a selfie stick. Should you buy a selfie stick?
I love the oatmeal. Matthew Ingram is he any relation to you? Matthew Ingram?
Inman, no.
Inman? Ingram?
All people named Matthew are not related.
Yeah, but Inman and Ingram, practically your brother. No, you're right. That doesn't make any sense at all. There it is. Should you buy a selfie stick, writes the oatmeal, a handy guide for shoppers. Have you completely given up on life? Yes, you should buy a selfie stick. No, are you Japanese? Yes, you should buy a selfie stick. No, you should not buy a selfie stick. It's a simple decision tree.
My favorite is the little arrow at the bottom of the drawing.
Yeah.
What? Scroll down.
Crocs.
Crocs. Oh, I wear Crocs too. Crocs are great. What's wrong with Crocs?
I actually think selfie sticks are an interim technology, and soon we'll have little mini drones that can take pictures from anything.
I
like that.
I ordered a drone too. I am Mr. With It.
I would like a drone.
Yeah, I'll send you one. You can put your camera on it, and you'll be looking up the whole time you do
and
the show.
And a mini. Do you want to put it in the same package?
We'll put it in with the Mac Mini, absolutely.
Okay.
Matthew Ingram, GigaOhm.com.
You have to have a drone camera for the show. Yeah.
Yes.
We do, but I don't know, doing it inside, if it's a good idea.
Oh, yeah. It's a great idea.
What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, Leo, what? You had a fire dancer inside.
That's true. You saw that. You were there.
I smelled it.
We had to leave because the kerosene was so... But she was great. She was great. Jeff Jarvis is at the City University of New York. We call it CUNY. And he also blogs at BuzzMachine.com. And he's on Twitter. And he's on Google+. And his latest book...
Soon I'll be on a Mac.
We'll send you a Mac. We'll talk... I'll get John to talk to you. And we'll get you an appropriate piece of hardware. We would love to replace Skype. It's not that we're, in love with Skype. It's just the only thing that seems to work reliably, alas.
Well, I should have restarted the machine right before the show. I learned that.
It's pretty good now. It's settled down.
Yeah, it's better. And I closed everything on the machine. And
that's the key. Okay. Nothing else can be going on.
Yeah.
We do This Week in Google every Wednesday. I love this selfie stick. I'm just going to keep using this.
It's made for you, Mr. TV.
I love Narcissus's wand. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 2100 UTC. You can watch live.twit.tv. You can join us in studio. We love that. Tickets at twit.tv. Just email us so we put a chair out for you. But if you can't watch or be here, well, of course, you can always download audio and video after the fact. twit.tv/twig is the website. But you can also find This Week in Google everywhere you can find podcasts, iTunes, and all the aggregators. And on our newly released, we didn't do it, but thank you, Mark, for doing it. Mark Hansen did a beautiful job of, what is it called? Twit Droid? It's the Twit Pro? Twit Pro for Android.
Yeah.
3.0 just came out. There are actually several Android apps, several iOS apps. There's, thanks to Shiftkey Software, they do a great iOS app. They also did our Roku app. These are all independent third-party developers who work very hard and do a great job making it easy for you to watch wherever you are. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on Twig.